Isn't it absolutely mind-blowing how most days blur together, like ripples in an endless ocean? How each one feels so interchangeable, so much like the last, that it's as if we're trapped in a loop, living the same day over and over again. But here's the beauty, hiding in the mundane. Within those seemingly endless, repetitive days, there are quiet, almost imperceptible moments. Choices we make, risks we take, chances we don't let slip away, and even though we don't realize it at the time, those small, bold decisions have the power to rewrite the story of our lives. And before you know it, a year passes. Suddenly you're not the same person anymore. You're standing in a place you never thought you'd reach. You've grown in ways you never imagined. You've met people who've changed your life, experienced moments that have reshaped you, and found yourself living, truly living, through the twists and turns of time. This reminds me of something I read in the 12-week year, how intentional action and focused effort can transform the ordinary into the extraordinary, how even in the repetition, there's an invitation to create something new, to chase something better. And maybe, just maybe, today could be that day for you, that one moment where everything quietly shifts. Here's what the book says. What I find profound is that the difference between greatness and mediocrity on a daily and weekly basis is slim, yet the difference in results down the road is tremendous. The difference between greatness and mediocrity for a salesperson is 2 or 3 extra appointments a week, 5 or 10 more calls a day, 3 hours out of a 45-hour work week spent working on their business. For a manager or leader, it's recognizing the good work of one more person each day, delegating a task instead of doing it themselves, spending 3 hours of their week on strategic priorities, given verbal praise and encouragement to someone who's struggling. On a daily and weekly basis, these differences seem minor, but in the long run, they are significant. I started this year utterly burnt out after a relentless 2023 where every waking moment revolved around my medical studies. I was drained, physically, mentally, emotionally. Every experience was shaped by the pressure to excel, stressing over exams, obsessing over marks, and testing endless study methods. I convinced myself that attending lectures for the first time since COVID, while everyone doubted it was even worth it, was the boldest thing I'd ever done. Waiting outside alone for hours studying in the cold, I thought that was what bravery looked like. But beneath all that focus, something was missing. I felt a deep, aching void where meaningful relationships should have been. I longed for connection, platonic love, companionship, and I even thought about marriage. Not because I was ready, not because I'd found the right person or had my life figured out. Far from it. I wanted marriage because everyone around me did. In my environment, that was the ultimate goal, the measure of success. I started to envy people who had what I didn't, longing for things I knew deep down I wasn't prepared for. I didn't truly want those things. I just wanted something. I wanted to feel like I mattered, like my life had direction, even though I had no idea where I was going. Looking back, I see how I let the desires of others cloud my own. I mistook their goals for my own, chasing dreams that weren't even mine. And this reminds me of something James Clear writes in Atomic Habits. Environment is the invisible hand that shapes human behavior. Despite our unique personalities, certain behaviors tend to arise again and again under certain environmental conditions. In church, people tend to walk in whispers. On a dark street, people act wary and guarded. In this way, the most common form of change is not internal, but external. We are changed by the world around us. Every habit is context dependent. In 1936, psychologist Kurt Lewin, I guess, wrote a simple equation that makes a powerful statement. Behavior is a function of the person in their environment. But through all the chaos, the pressure, and the burnout, the thing I'm most proud of is that I didn't let go of the habits that kept my life together. The ones that reminded me of who I am. The ones that anchored me when everything felt overwhelming. These habits centered around the most important pillars of life. Pillars we talked about in the very first episode of this podcast. Putting Allah first. Staying grounded in my faith through prayer and reading about spirituality. No matter how hard things got, this was my compass, the thing that kept me steady. The second thing was nurturing relationships, from family to friends to the people I encounter in my day-to-day life. I made a conscious effort to take care of the bonds that matter. And third was chasing my hero. That year, my focus was on becoming the best version of myself as a medical student, but I didn't stop there. I kept promises I made to myself. I kept working out 45 minutes every day following Pamela Rife's plan, just like I'd been doing since COVID. Even when the challenges of medical school felt like they'd swallow me whole, I never let go of that commitment. And for that, I'm proud. So proud of the 2023 version of me. I wasn't perfect, but I tried my best with what I had, and honestly, that's more than enough. But there's this question I kept asking myself. Why didn't I give up? Why did I keep going when it would have been so easy to stop? That question took me back to a speech I saw years ago, one that stayed with me ever since. It was by the one and only Matthew McConaughey at the University of Houston. It's funny how Matthew always manages to sneak into these episodes. In that speech, he said something profound. We shouldn't just look for reasons why we fail. We also need to ask why we succeed. Why are we happy? Why do certain things work? So he says, number 7, dissect your successes and the reciprocity of gratitude. We so often focus on failure, don't we? We study failure. We're obsessed with failure. We dissect failure in our failures. We dissect them so much, we end up intoxicated with them to the point of dissolution. When do we write in our diary? Usually when we're depressed. What do we gossip about? Other people's flaws and limitations. We can dissect ourselves into self-loathing if we're not careful. I find that most of the times, our obsession with what is wrong just ends up breeding more wrong, more failure. And the easiest way to dissect success is through gratitude. Giving thanks for that which we do have, for what is working. Appreciating the simple things we sometimes take for granted. We give thanks for these things and that gratitude reciprocates, creating more to be thankful for. It's really simple and it works. Now, I'm not saying be in denial of your failures. No, we can learn from them too, but only if we look at them constructively, as a means to reveal what we're good at, what we can get better at, what we do succeed at. Personally, I've read a whole lot of my bad reviews. I've had quite a few written by the more talented critics. They are the ones who give constructive bad reviews. They reveal to me what did translate in my work, what came across, what was seen, or what wasn't. Now, I don't obsess on the unfavorable aspect of their review, but I do see what I can learn from it, because their displeasure actually uncovers and makes more apparent what I do well, what I am successful at, and then I dissect that. Life's a verb. We try our best. We don't always do our best. Our architecture is a verb as well. Yes, it is. And since we are the architects of our own lives, let's study the habits, the practices, the routines that we have that lead to and feed our success, our joy, our honest pain, our laughter, our earned tears. Let's dissect that and give thanks for those things. And when we do that, guess what happens? We get better at them, and we have more to dissect. As I began making this episode, a memory surfaced. A mission statement I wrote at the very start of COVID, inspired by the book The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. It was about beginning with the end in mind. Maybe without even realizing it, that mission statement became the anchor that kept me from giving up. That thought made me want to revisit it, to reread the words I'd written and reflect on their power. There's a passage from the book that stayed with me ever since. See yourself going to the funeral of a loved one. Picture yourself driving to the funeral parlor or chapel, parking the car, and getting out. As you walk inside the building, you notice the flowers, the soft organ music. You see the faces of friends and family you pass along the way. You feel the shared sorrow of losing, the joy of having known that radiates from the hearts of the people there. As you walk down to the front of the room and look inside the casket, you suddenly come face to face with yourself. This is your funeral, 3 years from today. All these people have come to honor you, to express feelings of love and appreciation for your life. As you take a seat and wait for the services to begin, you look at the program in your hand. There are to be 4 speakers. The first is from your family, immediate and also extended. Children, brothers, sisters, nephews, nieces, aunts, uncles, cousins, and grandparents who have come from all over the country to attend. The second speaker is one of your friends, someone who can give a sense of what you were as a person. The third speaker is from your work or profession, and the fourth is from your church or some community organization where you've been involved in service. Now think deeply. What would you like each of these speakers to say about you and your life? What kind of husband, wife, father, or mother would you like their words to reflect? What kind of son or daughter or cousin? What kind of friend? What kind of working associate? What character would you like them to have seen in you? What contributions, what achievements would you want them to remember? Look carefully at the people around you. What difference would you like to have made in their lives? That passage hits hard, doesn't it? It forces you to pause and think, really think, about the person you are and the person you want to become. And here's what's fascinating. Isn't it strange how many successful people obsess over the concept of death? In the last episode, we talked about how Steve Jobs constantly thought about death to keep his work and life in perspective. Austin Kleon, the author of Share Your Work, begins each day by reading obituaries. Could it be that this focus on mortality, the fleeting, fragile nature of life, isn't just a reminder of the end but a reason for their success? Could facing the reality of death give them the clarity to live more boldly, more intentionally? Maybe. Anyways, to go back to the personal mission statement and beginning with the end in mind, in developing our own self-awareness, many of us discover ineffective scripts, deeply embedded habits that are totally unworthy of us, totally incongruent with the things we really value in life. Habit 2, which is to begin with the end in mind, says we don't have to live with those scripts. We are responsible to use our imagination and creativity to write new ones that are more effective, more congruent with our deepest values, and with the correct principles that give our values meaning. Suppose, for example, that I'm highly overreactive to my children. Suppose that whenever they begin to do something I feel is inappropriate, I sense an immediate tensing in the pit of my stomach. I feel defensive walls go up. I prepare for battle. My focus is not on the long-term growth and understanding, but on the short-term behavior. I'm trying to win the battle, not the war. I pull out my ammunition, my superior size, my position of authority, and I yell or intimidate or I threaten or punish and I win. I stand there victorious in the middle of the debris of a shattered relationship while my children are outwardly submissive and inwardly rebellious. suppressing feelings that will come out later in uglier ways. Now, if I were sitting at the funeral we visualized earlier, and one of my children was about to speak, I would want his life to represent the victory of teaching, training, and disciplining with love over a period of years rather than the battle scars of quick fix skirmishes. I would want his heart and mind to be filled with the pleasant memories of deep, meaningful times together. I would want him to remember me as a loving father who shared the fun and the pain of growing up. I would want him to remember the times he came to me with his problems and concerns. I would want to have listened and loved and helped. I would want him to know I wasn't perfect, but that I had tried with everything I had, and that perhaps more than anybody in the world, I loved him. The reason I would want those things is because deep down, I value my children. I love them. I want to help them. I value my role as their father. But I don't always see those values. I get caught up in the thick of thin things. What matters most gets buried under layers of pressing problems, immediate concerns, and outward behaviors. I become reactive, and the way I interact with my children every day often bears little resemblance to the way I deeply feel about them. Because I am self-aware, because I have imagination and conscience, I can examine my deepest values. I can realize that the script I'm living is not in harmony with those values, that my life is not the product of my own proactive design, but the result of the first creation I have deferred to circumstances and other people, and I can change. To begin with the end in mind means to approach my role as a parent as well as my other roles in life with my values and directions clear. It means to be responsible for my own first creation, to rescript myself so that the paradigms from which my behavior and attitude flow are congruent with my deepest values and in harmony with correct principles. And according to Stephen Covey, that is what the personal mission statement is all about. The most effective way I know to begin with the end in mind is to develop a personal mission statement or philosophy or creed. It focuses on what you want to be, the character, and to do, the contributions and achievements, and on the values or principles upon which being and doing are based. You could call a personal mission statement a personal constitution. Like the United States Constitution, it's fundamentally changeless. A personal mission statement based on correct principles becomes the same kind of standard for an individual. It becomes a personal constitution, the basis for making major life-directing decisions, the basis for making daily decisions in the midst of the circumstances and emotions that affect our lives. And I wanted to review my own personal mission statement so that I begin 2025 grounded in my principles. For example, I wanted to restate the fact that I wanted to surrender to Allah and His decisions, to put Him first in everything I did, and seek His help in everything I would do. To trust that His plan is always better than my own, no matter how illogical it may seem to me. Because most times, I know so little, and I could never grasp the extent of the beauty He's giving me. Remembering what Matthew McConaughey said in his book Green Lights, I've never felt like a victim. I have a lot of proof that the world is conspiring to make me happy. I've always gotten away with more in life than in my dreams. I wanted to remind myself that I should never blindly follow what other people are telling me without looking and searching for myself, without studying the question thoroughly, that I wanted to have the best qualities a human being can have. I wanted to tell myself that my whole goal, whether it's in the podcast, the YouTube channel, or my work as a doctor, or if I hopefully have a business, would be to learn and document my journey, but also to be in the service of others. To create the best thing I can, not thinking in terms of 6 months periods or 5 years, but in decades. many decades, and that I'll try to improve every single time using every technology available. And that money, well, as Henry Ford would say, money comes naturally as the result of service. I wanted me to know that Dunya wanted to be a great, kind, loving, caring, compassionate wife, mother, daughter, sister, and friend. That she wanted to find love, to support, to respect. That she wanted to be wise enough for people to come and seek her help and advice. That she one day wanted to be this incredible mother whose children respected and were inspired by. Children she could push to their limits and make them better than herself, but not for the wrong reasons. Not to get the money they never had or to get the love they never got. Not make them think as if they're not good enough or make them feel like they don't matter. I wanted me to know that Dunya wanted to be there for her parents and brothers as long as she was alive, that she would try to give back as much or more than she ever got. That Dunya would never be too busy for them, that she will always be there to listen to them, their stories, their fears. And that was the same for her friends. And last but not least, I wanted to remember that my goal was to create the best, strongest, most patient, wise, intelligent, disciplined version of myself. That I want to always learn, always train, always surpass my limits while taking care of myself. So back to end of 2023, I found myself burnt out and broken in many ways. Yet despite everything, I held on to hope. I still had faith and I could see a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. And as 2024 began, I made a promise to myself. I wanted to relax less and work more. Not just on my studies or professional career, but on myself. On my dreams. I wanted to become better in every possible way. This year was going to be my gift to myself. A year of growth, wisdom, hope, and life. I didn't have all the answers or a clear plan, but I was determined to make it happen. Listening to David Sunrise Founders podcast fueled that determination even more. Hearing the stories of history's greatest founders, I couldn't help but aspire to be like them. Visionary, resilient, and impactful. Inspired, I started taking small steps toward big changes. I began watching movies and reading books in German to improve my language skills. Reading Elon Musk's biography ignited my curiosity about the future, technology, AI, and programming. That led me to start following CS50's lessons on Python and web development. And I began exploring AI applications in medicine. Along the way, I created a personal business journal to document the ideas and inspirations that kept coming to me. I wanted to grow, to succeed, not just professionally, but holistically. In February, I took another significant step. I joined a gym. That decision transformed my life in ways I hadn't expected. The gym became a source of happiness and focus, but it also deepened my obsession with self-improvement. It was really empowering. However, the journey wasn't smooth. After all the hardships and burnouts I faced in 2023, I thought I'd hit rock bottom. But life had more lessons in store for me. Personal challenges arose, including a family situation that shook me to my core. It was overwhelming. I felt like I wasn't in control of my life anymore. Exams loomed and I had to juggle intense study sessions while navigating emotional turmoil. Looking back, I now realize that period brought me closer to despair than I'd ever been. I'm saddened by the dark thoughts I had then, by how close I came to losing all hope. But as Buster Moon from Sing says, when you've reached rock bottom, there's only one way to go, and that is up. It was hard, unimaginably hard, but Hitting rock bottom is what sparked the idea for my perfectly imperfect journey in this podcast. And for that, I am endlessly grateful. Those struggles taught me profound lessons, reminding me of the quote from Even Almighty. Let me ask you something. If someone prays for patience, you think God gives them patience? Or does he give them opportunities to be patient? If he prayed for courage, does God give him courage? Or does he give him opportunities to be courageous? If someone prayed for the family to be closer, do you think God zaps them with warm, fuzzy feelings? Or does he give them opportunities to love each other? Reflecting on this, I now believe that because I prayed for growth and self-betterment, Allah placed me in situations that tested my abilities and pushed me to rise to the occasion. These challenges were opportunities to grow, not punishments, but lessons. As Steve Jobs once said, it was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Sometimes life hits you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. And I didn't. I'm grateful for everything I've endured because it shaped me into someone stronger, wiser, and more determined than ever. Moving forward, I hope I won't have to face such trials again, but if I do, I hope I'll face them with faith and resilience. Those lessons also reminded me of the concept of the eraser test introduced in Mo Godet's Solve for Happy. Life isn't selective when it comes to nudges. While it can nudge harder when there is greater good further down the path, it takes everyone on detours every now and then. Even you, I'm sure, have been taken on many such detours. Here's a simple test to help you recognize when you're being nudged. It's the eraser test. Imagine a new technology that allows you to choose any past event you don't like and simply erase it as if it never happened. Erase it from your memory and from the actual flow of time as well. The technology also traces the effect of the event across the trail of time and automatically erases all of its consequences all the way up to the present moment. Your path in life will be altered to correspond with one that isn't affected in any way by the event you elected to erase. Now ask yourself, if this technology actually existed, how many events would you elect to erase? Ask yourself how many events you would rather keep, even though at the time they happened, you thought of them as bad. Almost all of those to whom I've presented this hypothetical test agree, while a few managed to find a handful of events they deeply regretted and wanted to erase, most decided to keep some of their toughest experiences unchanged. Knowing that erasing an event erases the trail it created, the majority of people I interviewed chose to keep the nudge, grateful for the path onto which it took them. When I think about it, I wouldn't erase anything from my past, no matter how hard it was. Those moments pushed me to grow, to evolve, to begin chasing my hero. They inspired me to document my journey and to try new things, even when they scared me. I started waking up at 4 a.m., rearranging my entire day and making time for exercise and personal development. They gave me the courage to join the Hive Public Speaking Club, where I found a community of people who shared my interest and valued what I was creating. These nudges even led me to apply for an English teaching job at a nearby language school. A year ago, I would have been too shy to ask for such an opportunity, let alone believe in my ability to do it. Although I didn't get the position yet because it requires specific training and I'm not even sure I want to do it, but the simple act of applying felt monumental. It was proof that I'm not the same hesitant person I once was. Going through those tough experiences was like a near-death awakening. It gave me clarity about what I want from life and the courage to pursue it. And I'm still learning and evolving, always hungry for growth. Recently, I came across a video by Ali Abdaal about setting better goals for the new year. His approach resonated deeply with me, and I'm eager to implement it and share it with you. Instead of overwhelming annual goals, he suggests breaking the year into 12-week chunks, each focused on 3 to 4 major goals. These shorter time frames feel more actionable and less intimidating. He also emphasizes the value of weekly reviews, spending 20 minutes reflecting on wins, challenges, and setting priorities for the week ahead. Another idea I loved was the concept of a morning manifesto, where you start each day by revisiting your top weekly goals and focusing on what matters most for the day, treating it like a mini adventure. Ali also introduced the practice of using focus logs, tracking the time spent on deep work to stay accountable and measure progress. And then there's multimodality multitasking, like listening to podcasts while walking or doing chores, which helps make the most of otherwise idle moments. But let's explore the core ideas of the 12-week year more closely. At the heart of this system is the problem of annualized thinking. At the heart of annualized thinking is an unspoken belief that there is plenty of time in the year to make things happen. In January, December looks a long way off. Think about it. We begin the year with big goals, but by the end of January, we usually find ourselves slightly behind where we need to be. While we're recently not pleased, we're not too worried either, because we think to ourselves, I've got plenty of time. I've got 11 more months to catch up. At the end of March, we're still a bit behind, but again, we're not too worried. Why? Because we still think we've got plenty of time to catch up. And this thought pattern prevails late into the year. We mistakenly believe that there is a lot of time left in the year, and we act accordingly. We lack a sense of urgency, not realizing that every week is important, every day is important, every moment is important. And this cycle of complacency continues until the year-end pressure forces a last-minute surge in activity. If you've ever been part of a year-end push, Moran writes, you know the difference between success and failure for the entire year often hangs in the balance during the final 60 days. It's a time of heightened focus where unnecessary tasks are cast aside in favor of critical ones. As he aptly puts it, there's nothing like a deadline to get you motivated. This brings us to the concept of redefining time through periodization. Periodization began as an athletic training technique designed to dramatically improve performance. Its principles are focus, concentration, and overload on a specific skill or discipline. Periodization in sports is a focused training regimen that concentrates on one skill at a time for a limited period, usually 4 to 6 weeks. After each 4 to 6 week period, the athlete then moves to the next skill in sequence. In this way, capacity in each skill is maximized. Let's redefine a year. A year is no longer 12 months. It is now only 12 weeks. That's right. A year is now a 12-week period. There are no longer 4 periods in a year. That's all thinking. Now there is just a 12-week year followed by the next 12-week year ad infinitum. Each 12-week period stands on its own. It is your year. And here is how you can make the most out of it. There are 8 elements that we believe are fundamental to high performance in any endeavor. Those 8 elements are vision, planning, process control, measurement, time use, accountability, commitment, and greatness in the moment. We've organized these elements into a set of 3 principles and 5 disciplines. The 12-week year builds on a foundation of 3 principles that, in the end, determine an individual's effectiveness and success. These principles are accountability, commitment, and greatness in the moment. Accountability is ultimately ownership, a willingness to own actions and results, regardless of the circumstances. Commitment is a personal promise that you make to yourself. And finally, greatness in the moment. Well, greatness is not achieved when a great result is reached, but long before that, when an individual makes the choice to do what is necessary to become great. The results are not the attainment of greatness, but simply confirmation of it. You become great long before the results show it. It happens in an instant, the moment you choose to do the things you need to do to be great, and each moment that you continue to choose to do those things. The 12-week year tackles both the way you think and the actions you take. At the action level, it concentrates on building capacity within a set of success disciplines that are required for effective execution. These five disciplines are vision, planning, process control, measurement, and finally time use. The first step to creating breakthrough with the 12-week year is to craft a great vision for yourself. This should be a fun and inspiring exercise. Vision is critical because there will be days when you just won't feel like taking action on your plan. To help you stay on track, you will need a powerful reason why, and that's your vision. There are three time horizons that you'll want to focus your vision on. Long-term aspirations, and those would be 5, 10, or 15 years down the road. Midterm goals, about 3 years into the future, and 12 weeks. The second discipline is planning. Operating in the 12-week year execution cycle creates an increased premium on the value of time. In 12 weeks, each day counts toward reaching your goals. The value of each moment is brought into sharp focus when there are only 12 weeks in your entire year. Writing an effective 12-week plan is key to accomplishing great things in only 12 weeks. The plan defines the actions that you will need to take each week of the 12 to reach your goal. There are 5 criteria that will help you create better 12-week plans when you are writing goals and tactics. Criteria 1 is to make them specific and measurable. For each goal and or tactic, be sure to quantify and qualify what success looks like. How many calls will you make? How many pounds will you lose? How far will you run? How much income will you earn? The more specific you can be, the better. Criteria 2, state them positively. Focus on what you want to happen that is positive. For example, rather than focusing on a 2% error rate, you would target a 98% accuracy rate. Criteria 3, ensure they are a realistic stretch. If you can accomplish the goal without doing anything differently, then you probably need to stretch more. If it is absolutely impossible, then factor it back a little. Criteria 4 is to assign accountability, and criteria 5 is to be time-bound. Now, the next discipline would be installing process control. It's not enough to have a vision and a plan. If your goals and plan are designed to help you achieve a higher level of performance, then you most likely have specific tactics that are new actions for you. New actions are almost always uncomfortable. That's one of the things that makes change so difficult. It's one thing to identify the actions needed to create a better result. It's a whole other thing to constantly do them. Without structural and environmental support, follow-through becomes a constant exercise of willpower. If you are going to achieve what you are capable of, you can't leave it up to willpower alone. Process control uses tools and events to create support structures that can augment and in some cases take the place of willpower. There are 2 items I want to share with you that will form the foundation of your support. The first is the weekly plan, which is a powerful tool that translates the 12-week plan into daily and weekly action. And the second element of process control is peer support. We recommend, and this is the authors talking, forming a group of 2 to 4 committed individuals to meet weekly. We call these meetings WAMS, which stands for Weekly Accountability Meeting. The weekly plan and the WAM are 2 steps in a 3-step process called the weekly routine. The weekly routine consists of 3 simple yet powerful steps. First, score your week, then plan your week, and then third, participate in a WAM. Measurement drives the execution process. It is your touchstone with reality. Truly effective measurement combines both lead and lag indicators to provide the comprehensive feedback needed for informed decision-making. Lag indicators, things like income, sales, commission dollars, pounds lost, body fat percentage, overall cholesterol levels, represent the end results that you are striving to achieve. Lead indicators are the activities that produce the end result. For instance, the number of sales calls or referrals are lead indicators in the sales process. Finally, the last discipline is time used by taking back control of the day. Here is an encouraging story of how time blocking allowed Annette Battista to balance competing demands on her time at what was most important to her. It has been almost 2 years since I first read The 12-Week Year. I devoured it and applied the principles not only in my home business, but on a personal and professional level as well. My 12-week goals were to be on pace each 12 weeks for the yearly award given to the top performers and to begin to homeschool my child. In order to do this, I knew I needed a good plan. I am an outreach counselor. In that role, I educate clients about their medical benefits. I assist them in choosing a medical plan and doctor for themselves and or their children, as well as a dental plan and dentist for their children. To meet my goals each month, I have to complete 650 phone calls and conduct 100 home visits. I also have to do presentations at local agencies, attend health fairs and community meetings, and do a minimum of 15 community contacts each month, 8 of which have to be done face-to-face. I have an area of 6 zip codes to cover in 2 counties. I worried how I would get all this done. What could I do daily that would get me where I wanted to be by being steady and consistent? My profession is demanding and rewarding at the same time. I'm also a wife, mother, and grandmother. Becoming intentional about my plan in order to achieve everything I wanted to do would be critical. Time blocking effectively helped me to reach my goals. I use buffer blocks each morning, usually for 1 hour from 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. to check my mail, send out an encouraging word to my colleagues, and then prioritize my contact lists by order of importance. I then move on to the time blocks that I schedule each day to perform my key activities. For the next 4 hours, from 8:30 to 12:30 p.m., each day, I either make phone calls or home visits. These time blocks help me to stay on top of my very demanding workload. My time blocking works so well that by Tuesday, when I'm supposed to start calling my daily lists, I have already completed them. My weekly call lists are usually completed 1 to 2 weeks early each month. Next come my breakout blocks. After lunch each day, I start homeschooling, which takes me exactly 3 hours to do. Teaching gives me a break from work. I like teaching and my son enjoys learning. The different subjects we cover, Bible, language arts, science, math, history, and geography, provide a great way to tune into several different options within my breakout block. So things are not mundane and boring. When homeschooling is done, I finish my day with another buffer block, wrapping up with a few calls, data entry of what has been done for the day, and checking my email one last time before the day ends to make sure nothing major is pending for the next day. There are 3 components that form the foundation of effective time use. They are strategic blocks, buffer blocks, and breakout blocks. Each of these 3 time blocks is designed to help you accomplish key activities more efficiently. Strategic blocks are 3 hours in length and should be scheduled early in your week so that if one gets interrupted or canceled, you have time to reschedule it. They are blocks of time when you work on your business, not in it. Strategic blocks should also be scheduled during times when your work activity is typically lowest. 1 strategic block per week is usually adequate. Buffer blocks are designed to deal with the lower level activity and are typically between 30 minutes and 1 hour in length, scheduled 1 to 2 times per day. The actual amount of time for buffer blocks will depend upon the amount of email, phone calls, interruptions, and other administrivia you normally are required to handle. Breakout blocks are designed to prevent burnout and create more free time. They are 3 hours in length and should be scheduled once a week, after the rest of the 12-week year is working for you. We recommend that you only have one per month until everything else is working and you are executing well. I think that is where I'll leave it. As this chapter of 2024 comes to a close, I want to leave you with a heartfelt message. I really hope that over the past few months, this podcast has been more than just words in your ears. I hope it sparked something within you. Hope you felt inspired, learned something new, and maybe even found the courage to start chasing your own hero. I promise you this, I'm here for the long run. I'm committed to growing, improving, and bringing you even more value, not just next year, but for many years to come. Together, let's make 2025 the year of transformation. I wish you a year filled with unshakable happiness, boundless love, health, wisdom, success, and faith. May it be the most extraordinary, miracle-filled year of your life. Thank you. Thank you for your time, your support, and for believing in this journey. I'm deeply, endlessly grateful to have you here. Here's to chasing our heroes together, one step, one dream at a time. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast or YouTube channel, I'd really appreciate it if you did. Your support goes a long way in motivating me to keep chasing my hero and sharing this journey with you. Thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, take care and keep chasing your hero.